I am Planta on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Alan Doyle joins me again. The musician and actor has just written a new memoir, A Newfoundlander in Canada, Always Going Somewhere, Always Coming Home. It's got that inimitable storytelling we've come to expect. This new book takes us across the country as Doyle travels Canada, and how through it all, he's still at heart a Newfoundlander. It's heartwarming and often entertaining to read of his discovering this country. One wants to see the country as Doyle does and wants to see from where he came, the home in St. John's that brings him home over and over again. Alan Doyle is best known as the lead singer of the folk rock band Great Big Sea. In 2012, he released his first solo album, Boy on Bridge, which was a big hit, as was his second album, So Let's Go. His latest, A Week at the Warehouse, has just been released. Summer, Summer Night is the single off of that, and I enjoyed it. The website for more is at alandoyle.ca. This new book is published by Doubleday. Alan joined me from on the road in and around Owen Sound as he was making his way to an event. Please welcome back to the Planta Online program, Alan Doyle. Mr. Doyle, good morning.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. So I'm sure as you're traveling, as I speak to you, various stops along the way, talking about this book, you're being asked about Gord Downie.
Of course, yeah. I mean, Gord was a mentor and an icon and a pal to us all, you know. And he sadly missed him, like I think I've heard so many other people say today. It's kind of like a punch in the gut that we all knew was coming, but it doesn't make it hurt any less when it finally shows up.
Yeah, indeed. Where I Belong was such a great success. Did you enjoy writing that?
Yeah, it turned out that it was a great companion to a touring musician's life. Like, just the physical act of writing serves you well if you're touring in a band, because you have so much time on airplanes or in tour buses or, you know, in the hotel rooms and the like, and those hours can be lonely and guilty hours if you're not productive doing something, and that's why I turned, like, I think I took to writing books as a surprisingly satisfying pastime.
Yeah, and I guess what drew people to it was just the storytelling, because it comes straight through, especially in this new book. Mm-hmm. Are all of you in Newfoundland, are you all great storytellers?
I think they are probably. We have a higher average than most, you know. It's primarily because, you know, in the DNA of especially rural Newfoundlanders, we kind of had to record our history in songs and stories, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we didn't have libraries. There was no newspaper going up and down, you know. So if the stories often had a practical function, right? So and certainly when it came to entertainment, you know, in most of rural Newfoundland, if you wanted a song, well, you probably had to sing it yourself. You know, if a community wanted a dance, well, there better be a band in the community because there's nobody coming to do that for you.
Yeah. I wonder this because I was born in British Columbia and I've lived here my whole life. You're born in Newfoundland and you've lived there your whole life.
Correct.
Is there a sense growing up that say you folks there in Newfoundland are a little more different than say, oh, I don't know, people in British Columbia? Because I don't think I've ever thought of myself as any different than, say, the rest of Canada. But I'm sure in Newfoundland you guys feel a little special, if you will.
That's fantastic. Way to put it. Newfoundland's a special place. Just ask Newfoundlanders.
Yeah.
But it's true. It's for a very practical reason, right? I mean, a couple of practical reasons, really. I mean, Newfoundland, first of all, is very geographically isolated.
Yeah.
It is not connected to the rest of the country. It is an island off by itself, you know, and like, and of course, historically and politically, and it's, you know, not that long ago when it was an independent place to itself.
Yeah.
And it had its own culture and its own music and its own stuff, you know, and then, you know, I say it kind of awkwardly and sheepishly in the book, but it's true. I am a first generation Canadian. I am the first generation of Doyles from Petty Harbour to be born Canadians. You know, my mom and my dad was born in, you know, a different country. We're from the same town,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, and so, yeah, I mean, it was a country and a nation and a republic that had its own thing. And you know, it's not that long ago that we had our completely own generation of people that were born in that country, and they were all alive when I was a kid. And so, yes, the Newfoundland does very recently think of itself as a different place, for sure.
Did you remember how old you were when you first left Newfoundland, say, for a vacation or something like that?
Never left one time on a vacation with my family or anything. We didn't have any money. But, the first time I ever left Newfoundland, I got on an airplane and I flew to London.
Yeah.
You know, again, because I felt closer, you know, geographically and culturally to the south of Ireland than I did of anywhere else. I sounded more like people from there.
Yeah.
And so the first time I got a plane, I flew from St. John's to Heathrow. And that day, me and my brother got on the ferry and we went to Dublin.
And you say that in the book, in a different moment in the book, where you looked it up in terms of just how long it was.
Yeah.
From say Newfoundland to England to yeah. Then say here in British Columbia.
Yeah, well, like I say, Vancouver is further away from my house than by memory Berlin.
Yeah. And so when you think about Canada, because I'm sure you're asked this, and then you're probably asked this when you're outside of the country than say inside the country. But I mean, the rest of the world? I mean, how does that look like to you?
How does the rest of the world look like?
Yeah, especially when you have, I guess, these two things, you know, that you consider home, Canada and Newfoundland.
Hmm. Well, internationally traveling, I mean, with the exception of a few very learned, you know, alleged Canadian political history buffs,
yeah,
you know, I'm a Canadian. And that's good. And it's true. I am. I was born in Canada. I'm a Canadian. You know? And, you know, people don't know a lot about Canada. You know, they think it's, you know, a relatively average-sized country. But, of course, it isn't. Right? It's a very, very, very big country. And so you're often trying to, you know, educate people that, you know, Toronto and St. John's and Vancouver are as far apart as, you know, Berlin, London, and Istanbul.
No. Yeah. But you do feel at home in other places in Canada?
Totally, completely. Yeah. No question.
It'd be awfully different than say if one asked you people of your parents' vintage, right?
Yeah. My cousin and my, you know, the history of it goes. My grandparents, well, my grandfather, for example, would have been born in the 20s. In Petty Harbor, and he would have been an adult when the Confederation vote happened. And I know how he voted, and it wasn't to join Canada. I know because he told me and was very vocal about it.
Right.
And so my dad, for example, would have been born in the early 1940s and would have been, you know, a 10-year-old or whatever when the vote happened. And so he would remember the change or whatever the shift, if it was one, from being, you know, a Newfoundlander to a Canadian on your passport. And so, yeah, he wouldn't have thought very much about one or the other, you know, because, you know, knowing what I know about my parents, they got married very young and had kids and didn't have a lot of money and spent most of their time trying to make sure we were fed, you know, and things of national identity and the like didn't come into the conversation very often when you're running out of heat and oil and wood. So, yeah, so I'm really the first generation of people to consider this stuff, you know, and to consider in our family, and to consider, you know, what it all means, and maybe where our place is in the country, and or isn't, you know.
Yeah, is there a special connection, say, between Newfoundlanders and Quebecers?
Well, there's a history there that is long and storied because we're connected. You know, the province of Newfoundland and Labrador is physically connected to the province of Quebec, and on the ocean, of course, we shared a fishery and the like. And then there's, so, you know, the first racket, big racket between Newfoundland and Quebec was over the Labrador boundary. You know, and then there's been numerous times in the past when politically the governments of our provinces didn't get along at all, right?
And you write in the book, it's a fascinating story because it reveals a lot about you and it reveals a lot about the person that you were dealing with, but it also reveals something for the reader who reads it. Is the person that you encounter in Quebec and sort of the arguments that you're having?
Yeah.
Because the guy starts, the word is blanked out in the book, but you can say it if you want, starts cursing at you.
Well, yeah, he just calls us, collectively a very bad name.
Yeah.
And I think, his thing was, this would have been in the middle of the 1990s.
Mm-hmm.
And, he was a very political sort of leader of the, we were in a very separatist bar, and we wanted to go there because it was good tunes and good music, and we wanted to be a part of it. And, as the night went on, and he said, you come here, you sing your French Newfoundland songs, but, forgive my, I can't tell the story of that swim, but he said, you guys, you fuck us.
Yeah.
You Newfoundlander, fuck us with the Meech Lake.
Mm.
And I remember Sean saying, yeah, well, you guys fucked us with Church of Falls, which is the hydroelectric development that went completely in the lake's favor. And the guy said, yes, that was a good one. And we went back to drinking and singing songs.
And that's a marvelous story because, as I said, it reveals something. For the reader about how they feel about this country of theirs and the larger political issues that surround things, but at the same time it's that kinship that you managed to find throughout this country. You found it certainly in that bar that night.
Yeah,
and you've always found it.
And I think one of the cool things about Canada isn't that we think we got everything right, but the fact that we're always trying to get it right. That's far more beautiful in a way.
Indeed, yeah. The idea of Canada can also come from the food. I mean, is there something that as you travel the country, as you've crisscrossed the country many times, is there something that you found uniquely Canadian in terms of something to eat?
The great discovery for me that way was that food was one of my first key triggers to make me realize how homogeneously settled Newfoundland is, right? Like I never thought about that a lot when and one of the cool things in the book, of course, for me was that to try to explain that everywhere I went, I learned something about that place. But then I turned my eye back to Newfoundland, and it made me rethink what I thought I knew about home. So like I talk about it when I go to Montreal, for example, that I discovered that they had Indian food, and they had Italian food, and they had Jewish food, and they had. And so on and so on and so on. And it was only then that I kind of looked back at Newfoundland and went, why we don't have any Italian food? And the answer, of course, is because we don't have any Italians.
Yeah.
And like we don't have any Greek food because we don't have any Greeks. We don't have any, and we don't have any Mexican food because we don't have any from Mexico. And I didn't realize until I started traveling and looking through the food lens that, St. John's and Newfoundland is really, really, really settled by two very, very similar groups of people, Southern English and Southern Irish fishermen. And that's about it.
Yeah. And so when you go back and you eat the food there, does it make you want to go back to Montreal and taste the different foods?
Yes.
Now I'm sure that there are all sorts of different food options in Newfoundland, right?
Yeah, it's changed quite a bit.
Yeah.
But we still don't have a ton of... various, obvious, visible minorities. We don't have tons. We the doors are still open. Come one, come all.
Yeah. But what about Cadbury cream eggs? Do you like those still?
I can't be in the room with them. They trigger a physical, visceral response.
I never really liked them as a kid. You'd have one, I guess, at Easter or a couple, say. And then I read the what you wrote about them, and I must say the gag reflex is triggered by what you write.
That was just one of many stories I could have told. I wanted to have one story that sort of illustrated what it was like to cross the country in a tight van or car or whatever, where these were, again, the days before there was internet and everyone had their email. days when you had nothing. And so you, there was no, almost no protection from the boredom of it. You know, so you just made these dumb choices constantly, not because you were, you know, anything other than bored out of your mind, you know, and so it went.
Yeah, you realize as you read the book just how unglamorous show business can be in terms of how you get around this country.
Especially trying to be a music act developing in Canada, but like you say, when it's just so big,
yeah,
and it's so cold in the half of the year, and in my case, we were from exactly one far end of it. And the more I think about it, we're not even from the end of it. You know, we're from a piece stuck out in the ocean close to the end of it. We got to come back in to get to the end of it.
Yeah. Yeah. There's also a lot of drinking in the book, and is that something that I guess everyone who goes it through, you know, the career of a musician as they're starting out, I mean, that's something that factors a great deal in one's life, isn't it? Because that's all you do, really.
Certainly, if you had your apprenticeship where we had it.
Yeah.
You know, we had the apprenticeship in the pubs of Atlantic Canada. You know, though, I mean, I think it'd be different if you're in, you know, classical music or something.
Right.
You know, where, you know, most of the first 2 to 3 years of our lives were spent not just even in we're certainly not in theaters or even in rock clubs. I mean, we were in pubs.
Yeah.
You know, we had our entire first 2 years really in the drinking, you know, music pubs of the country.
It's just so it reads in the book as I read you, I mean, as I said, it's not a glamorous life, but it seems like a fun.
Oh my God, it was so much fun.
Yeah,
and it was fun in a whole bunch of different ways because just the travel was really satisfying and all that and then of course if you're in any band, there's the momentum of a band getting bigger or whatever is kind of intoxicating in a way, and then the fact that we were doing it with, you know, carrying Newfoundland traditions and music and the music of our people, more or less, to the rest of the world, that was even more satisfying.
Yeah. What also surprised me is smoking, that you avoided that throughout. Because, I mean, you travel with people that smoked all the time, but you still don't today?
No, I never smoked, you know, and it's a great thing because, as I say in the book, I guarantee I wouldn't be able to give it up if I did because I can't give up toast for Jesus' sake.
Yeah. So what's traveling like today? I mean, it's a lot different than it was when you first started your career. But I mean, do you still find it boring at times?
No, because I mean that's kind of where I started writing books. It was a very practical thing to do.
Yeah,
it's a great way to, you know, fill the hours that you're on airplanes a lot. And we, you know, we fly a lot more now than we did then. And we, the big magic time happened, you know, in the late 90s, early 2000s, when we got a tour bus that had a bunk on it.
Mm.
And all of a sudden, I mean, I remember walking on a tour bus for the first time, going, well, this changes everything. Like, this is, you know, your clothes, your bed, your food, your stuff is always with you all the time. And you don't have to get in the van at 9 o'clock in the morning and drive for 6 hours. You're going to wake up in the next town.
Yeah.
And it's just like all of a sudden you go like, this is fantastic.
Yeah. As you're writing this book, I mean, and you're looking back at when you started, I mean, it's awfully nostalgic. Do you miss it at all?
Oh God, I mean, I you know, I'm lucky to still be in the game, you know, still touring, still making music and all that stuff.
But it's a lot different though, Alan, when you're starting out and you haven't really broken yet. And you know, you have the feeling that you will, obviously, because why else would you do it?
Sure.
To today, when you can walk around the city and get recognized.
Yeah. Like I said, I don't think about that stuff that much, in all honesty. I kind of feel that the thrill of it when I was young was to get to play a concert at the nighttime.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And the thrill for me today is to get to play the concert in the nighttime, you know, and all the rest of it is kind of a side thing, I suppose. There's a novelty that we had to it then that was exciting, that, you know, there's not a novel thing to get on an airplane and fly to Toronto, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've done it lots of times, but there's still a pride or something that comes with it when I get excited about it, because I guess I'm excited that, you know, playing the guitar and singing still gets me on an airplane. You know what I mean? Like, that's kind of cool. and so, yeah, I find joy in it in ways that I think, you know, that I think of, will always be that way. You know, the people would buy a ticket to come see my concert. So thrilling to me.
Yeah. Is it the same thrill when you have an event at 8 o'clock, but it's related to a book that you're talking about, say?
No. No, it isn't. It's a total different kind of thing. This is all new to me, the whole book thing. I mean, I do the book things are satisfying because it's a bit of different kind of storytelling. But I'd be kind of lying to you if I didn't wish we had a concert tonight, and just to prove that that's true.
Yeah.
we're driving around Owen Sound looking for the Long and McQuaid, because at the last minute I said, I want to bring a guitar and sing some songs at the thing tonight. So we're going to go rent a guitar. Yeah, that's enough of this talking.
Yeah. this new album, A Week at the Warehouse, it's just come out, hasn't it?
Correct, a week ago. Not even a week ago, last Friday.
I listened to a couple of things off there, and the single is Summer, Summer Night, which is great.
Thank you.
But Fall, I really love that one.
Oh, thanks so much. Yeah, that's a sort of 680 kind of ballad, yeah.
Yeah. So you're going on tour for the book now, because I saw the list that your folks sent over, and you're going through places in America as well for the book. And then in the spring for the album, is that right?
The winter, actually, we start in January in Seattle, and we go down south and all around the south U.S. And then we go, you know, we go all over North America, basically, between January and the summer.
Is there a favorite place in Canada to perform? I mean, is there a place that when you talk amongst musician colleagues of yours that you say, well, that place is great because the audiences are great?
I think it's different for different bands and different reasons. Like, there's things that, like, you know, when you get to play, like, in Banff or something, or Jasper, or Lake Louise or something, you know, just like anybody traveling, it's just a thrill to get to go there and see that stuff, right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then other bands, there are other places that just have, like a city like Montreal, for example, just has incredible nightlife and unbelievable theaters and venues for music in a way that most cities don't. And then there's other things, you know, that are just cool. Like, I mean, you know, right after Christmas, on the second leg of that tour, I'm playing Massey Hall, you know, and that's nothing but a thrill to get to be, you know, on the long list of things that have happened in there.
Yeah. The word Newfie, I mean, that gets bandied about, you know, as a joke sometimes, but it really is a slur, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it was invented during the Second World War by American servicemen who were in Newfoundland, and they were called Newfie Johns, and they called the people around them who they thought were quite unworldly and you know, they called them Newfies, and that was a slang term, you know, to deride the local people. And, you know, I think, like, right now it gets used by a lot by people who I think assume that it's just an innocent nickname and abbreviation of Newfoundlander.
Yeah.
But it's not. You know, or at least in its original form, it wasn't. And, you know, and that's why I sort of ask people to steer away from using it. And, you know, because not that everyone agrees with my assessment of it, but, you know, what I always tell people is, if you're wondering, nobody's offended by Newfoundlander. So why not stick with that?
Yeah. People do use it too often. And, I mean, I hear it in this part of the world when they're, say, describing someone from, you know, outside of the urban area.
Mm-hmm.
And after reading the book, I mean, I must say I find it offensive.
Yeah, well, I mean, it is. That's what it was for.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, I've said to people who, like, disagree or whatever, I said, you know, I know you would like the origins of the word to be, you know, a heartfelt, lovable abbreviation for people from Newfoundland, but that's not what it is. I'm sorry. I wish it was, too. That's not, you know, I can't change what I know about the history of that word, you know, and that's the truth of it. And so, yeah.
Alan, you also have done some acting, and I'm wondering, I mean, you must enjoy that, otherwise you wouldn't do it from time to time, right?
Oh, what a laugh. It's a great time, you know, because you get to, you know, sort of learn, again, another kind of storytelling and learn that skill set with friends. I usually only do it when I get asked by buddies of mine to participate in something they're doing.
Yeah. Well, where do you think the because you have some aptitude in it, some talent in terms of your acting. Right. I've seen pieces that you've done. Do you think the storytelling way back from your childhood? I mean, that must inform whatever storytelling you're able to do as an actor.
Yeah, I mean, one of the great similarities in all the sort of things I do in the arts, and I think it's probably true in visual art as well, is that you're always trying to make it true, right? It has to be true, you know, and that makes sense in songs and poetry and stories, of course, that if they're true, if there's truth in it, that it rings through for people. It's like I always say about comedy. The easiest test for that is comedy, right? Mm. Because people laugh primarily at, they actually say it while they're laughing. They start laughing after a joke and look at each other and go, that's true. And that's why they're laughing. They're laughing because it's true, right? And the same thing is true in songs and all that stuff. And I think the confusing thing that people think is that they think that the art of acting is about fakery and about pretend.
Yeah.
When it's actually not. That's just what's happening on the outside. The emotion and you know, and if the character you're playing is frightened, and you know, that fake person that you're pretending to be is frightened in a fake frightened situation, pretend situation in a play or in a movie. The emotion that you need to draw on is some real fear that you have. And if you can use that fear that you know of something else you're afraid of, or some emotion that you can bring to the, and then that informs what people see. That's one of the ways people become great actors. Because then it's true.
Yeah.
The situation isn't true, the play isn't true, but the emotion and the inspiration for the action that you're seeing is the truth, you know?
Yeah. It's been such fun talking to you, Alan, and reading this book. As I told you before we started, how much I enjoyed it. So many laugh-out-loud moments and so many heart-rending moments, because one learns about this country a little bit better than before they started the book.
I appreciate it, man. It's great to talk to you, as always.
The book is called A Newfoundlander in Canada, Always Going Somewhere, Always Coming Home. It's published by Doubleday. Alan Doyle, join me on the road around Owen Sound in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.